Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
So good morning. Yeah, Natalie's off. Natalie's off today. She's picking up her mom and mom and family from the airport. So she's en route right now. So, and we haven't seen her in, I think, almost like almost like two years. So anyway, she's excited. So she is off today. So it's just me. So welcome in to Morning Invest on this Taco Tuesday, November 2nd. Coming up on today's show, you're never going to guess who's tanking the stimulus package. One senator could derail the entire multi-million dollar package. And today is election day for a few states, but all eyes on Virginia. So we've got a dead heat in a state that Biden won by a landslide. And the Supreme Court is blasting its way through the abortion case right now. And this could be a big setback for anti-abortion folks in Texas. We'll tell you what the Supreme Court, we're going to peek behind the curtain. We're going to peek underneath the robe of the Supreme Court justices. Might want to cover your eyes for that. Morning Invest starts right now on this Taco Tuesday. All right, so now we got this shot. Yeah, see, empty chair Natalie. Empty chair Natalie.
I told you you should have put that skeleton with the mohawk in there.
Yeah. Anyway, why is this stuff not showing up properly in my rundown?
Let me go. What is it supposed to say?
Well, then no worries about it. I'll just stick to this today. So don't worry about it. Okay. All right. Let's. I don't know what happened. Like, you know, Natalie's not here. Craziness. And
is it in retrograde?
No, I think, you know, hey, we did have that big sun flare the other day that caused all kinds of problems for people. Computers shut down, all kinds of problems. So maybe that's really what happened. Yeah. There's only one thing that's correct on that entire rundown, and that's about Finland. So that's about it. That's the only thing.
Oh, yeah, all the
correct.
Rest are from yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. It's all saved. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, who cares? Welcome into Morning Invest on this Tuesday. I want to start today with the stimulus update and what's going on with Joe Manchin. So unbelievable news overnight from Democrats. You know, we thought, well, President Biden is overseas at the Glasgow COP26 conference, and he shared some positivity yesterday that things were moving in the right direction, that he expected Nancy Pelosi to have this bill, this massive infrastructure bill, before the Senate, before the House of Representatives this week, and that it would be smooth sailing then into the Senate. Well, Democrats, we've been covering this here on the show for quite a while. Democrats have bent over backwards to please Senator Joe Manchin. But I guess it just isn't enough, because now the senator is saying that he is going to not support the president's $1.75 trillion social stimulus package. I guess he thinks that that's too generous, and he doesn't know how we're going to pay for it. Now, I want you to remember, of course, that this is the same guy. This is the same guy that wanted a $4 trillion stimulus package, okay? So he called for a $4 trillion stimulus package when this whole thing was unfolding. But now that it's at $1.75 trillion, it's too much for him. And it's, by the way, this whole thing has always hinged on him and Kyrsten Sinema, right, of Arizona. But in the last 12 or so hours, we've seen each of these groups shift strategy and exercise power in important ways. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, can you speak to like what, because every provision that really like that I saw that was for the people, like the paid sick leave, the expansion of eye, dental and hearing and all that stuff, what got pulled and what stayed? I don't even know what stayed in this bill now.
Well, we don't even have a full framework of this yet, because there's still horse trading going back and forth. So we don't really even know what's in it. We can tell you a couple of things that got removed. I will tell you this. I mean, this
So what I'm getting at basically is we don't know what he's contesting.
Well, we do, and we'll play his soundbite in a moment. But one of the things that Democrats are narrowing in order to make him happy, so he's winning on this, and so is Kyrsten Sinema, which is prescription drugs are getting slashed. So any of the prescription drug reforms piece of this bill is going to be slashed. Now, on the surface, you may say to yourself, hey, Clayton, that sounds great. You mean I'm going to pay less for prescription drugs? No. You're going to continue to pay the same amount because big pharmaceutical companies continue to make money hand over fist. So Democrats, according to Axios this morning, Democrats have been basically trying to pull out a huge portion of this, the major prescription drug reforms, because they don't know how they're going to pay for it.
Oh, jeez.
Right. So, like here, you know, here's what's locked in, okay? This is good news from Senator Ron Wyden. Every insulin product covered by Medicaid Part D would be available at a lower cost, okay? And those would be price negotiated by the government.
Right. And so it's what? I was just talking to a girl today at Starbucks that was saying she pays $2,000 a month for her diabetes medicine and everything. So what? It's going to be available for $1,000 a month now when it's still like affordable in other countries?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, $500 or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Thank you.
And we've got a story coming up a little bit later on the show about Finland and their healthcare. I mean, and the numbers are going to blow you away. If by the end of this show, all of you don't want to move to Finland, then maybe I haven't done my job. Well, and it's astonishing.
I got a question. Like, why? So it's so weird to me that you see Manchin coming in here and holding up this entire bill, him and Sinema, right? Mm-hmm. But it's like, why don't any progressives stand up and do this kind of thing? And why don't they tell Manchin, like, hey, you know what? If you don't vote for this, next time you propose anything, we're not voting on it. Nothing. We will not touch another one of your bills. We will not work with you on anything. Like, why don't they use that same kind of power? You're giving, they're suggesting that these two people on the Democratic Party are controlling all of the Democrats and what they all want as a majority. And they're going to let two people take that down. There's got to be other things they can do. That's why I always think that this is just political theater, because there has to be other things they can do to pressure these people to do this stuff.
Well, it'd be interesting to think. Like, so what do progress? Let's unpack that a little bit. Like, what do progressives want? Right. Progressives want really meaty money in here for climate change initiatives. Right. And so at least that and Bernie Sanders and others have said, Pramaya Jayapal and others have come out and said, we will not vote for this. And by the way, people like Joe Manchin don't want any of the climate stuff in there. Like, they're fighting this because of their fossil fuel money that they make. Right. So progressives actually have fought and gotten a huge chunk of the environmental stuff in there. Now, it's not as much as they'd like. I think it's over $500 billion right now. They wanted north of a trillion, but Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and other moderates won. You know, there are other moderates, too. We don't even pay lip service to.
But that's over 10 years or whatever. Like, that's $500 billion for 10 years. That's not going to do a damn thing. And that's the thing. It's like they always sell themselves short. It's like, why can two senators do this, but a group of seven progressives can't have a lot more pull and make things happen? Like, they could pressure. Like, why isn't the president out going to state and pressuring Manchin and Sinema? Because Biden actually wants, Biden doesn't even, this makes it look like Biden doesn't want any of this.
No, and that's been my point. Like, earlier in this week, I said, you know, he has shown a lack of leadership on this issue and should have been out there using the power of the bully pulpit, using the podium to say that this is not a time for weakness.
That's one thing you can say. Yeah, he could have gone Trump.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And he would have. And that's the thing with Trump. He would have called out Mitch McConnell, which he did, you know.
And he would have called him Turtle Boy.
And he exactly. And he called out Ted Cruz back when he was running. But here's the thing, right? You've got, remember when Trump slammed Mitch McConnell during the December time period when he was trying to go weak on stimulus checks, and he called him out on it. So he's not afraid. He was not afraid to go after his own party. And Joe Biden just wanted to have kumbaya moments with people like Joe Manchin.
With both parties.
Joe Manchin held a press conference yesterday, and here's exactly what he said as to why he's not going to support this any longer. At this news conference, he basically said, you know, I'm making it clear that I have no problem with killing this bill. If Democratic congressional leaders in the White House don't move this proposal in my direction, he made it clear that he hasn't approved Biden's framework. And he said there's a lot of work to be done, including a deep dive into the long-term fiscal and economic impact of the legislation. And he basically said that this is like a shell game right now. They're just moving money around trying to hide things. And he says he's sick and tired of it, that he's holding, you know, and he's like, I'm going to hold this $1 trillion thing hostage. So here is what he said.
Simply put, I will not support a bill that is this consequential without thoroughly understanding the impact that it'll have on our national debt, our economy, and most importantly, all of our American people.
Mm, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you're so concerned about this now. He said it's counterproductive right now. He said it's counterproductive to be moving things in this direction right now until we can actually look at the money and where it's going or how it's going to be spent. Oh, yeah. Now he's concerned about that, right? When money's lined up for the defense budget, he doesn't give a rasp.
Yeah, can you do me a favor and pull up that soundbite of him saying he wasn't in favor of where we were going to spend for the war budget, like where we were going to get that money? Can you just play that soundbite really quick from any of them?
I couldn't find that. Oh, there is no soundbite. You won't find that anywhere.
Oh,
from any of these clowns.
Oh, so we can pay for military budget, but when it's something that benefits the people, like how are we going to pay for it? It's like it's coming out of their own pockets at that point,
right?
But yeah. 85 car motorcades, you know, these lavish trips and stuff like that, and war and all that. The money's just doesn't matter where we're going to pay.
It's what we do. You know, and I got to think about. I'm just sort of thinking about where. You know, what Nancy Pelosi is going to do here, what's going to happen this week. She's supposed to bring this bill up for a vote later this week, maybe even by tomorrow. After weeks of saying that they wouldn't vote for the bipartisan infrastructure bill until they got this ironclad assurances of Manchin and Sinema, you know, House progressives now say they're ready to vote this week. So now they're ready to vote. And then suddenly he moves the football again, like Lucy from Charlie Brown. Speaker Pelosi told her leadership team last night on the Rules Committee that we're going to get ready to meet on Wednesday, signaling a possible floor vote by the end of the week on the Build Back Better plan. So what's she going to do? She's going to pass the version of this bill and then send it over to the Senate, where Manchin is going to then hold it hostage and it's going to be killed? I mean, can you believe this effing guy? I mean... And he's held this bill hostage as he's like, you know, he's so the things. Let's be clear about the things that Manchin is opposed to here. He's opposed to paid family leave and any kind of tax increases. And also, of course, rolling back the fossil fuel provisions, like he doesn't want that to be rolled back. I mean, isn't that amazing? You've got literally a senator from West Virginia who's paid by the fossil fuel industry, right, by the coal companies. Joe Biden is in Glasgow, Scotland this morning at the COP26 conference, where he is right now arguing that the United States should be a leader in reduction of fossil fuels. At the same time, they're increasing coal production in the United States. Like, what? We are headed for a freaking disaster. Like, these are the leaders we have right now.
Well, then how since when, like we have a majority, a Democratic majority, since when does a senator have more power than a speaker? Like, how does this happen? Like, why do they need his vote so bad?
Well, you know, you've got 50 senators, right? And you've got a 50-50, or you've got 50 senators on the Democratic side. You got a 50-50 Senate right now, where Kamala Harris is the tie-breaking vote. And that's what it comes down to in the United States. I mean,
without him,
this power.
Without him, where does that put him?
That puts them. I mean, without Manchin, you mean in the Senate?
Yeah. Let's say he votes no on a bill where the majority votes yes. They've got what, 49-1?
Oh, why? They won't pass it. If Manchin votes no on this, that's it. Game over. They're done. They don't have. I mean, because every Republican's going to vote against it, so. Then they're screwed. It does not pass with a simple majority.
That's like, think about this. Let's put this in perspective. This is like the whole state of Indiana, all right? I'm from Indiana, so let's say the whole state of Indiana, right? And the whole state of Indiana wants health care. And you got one crotchety old man up in South Bend, Indiana, sitting in a rocking chair saying, no. And they're like, right. Oh, we can't. Old Fred in the rocking chair doesn't want it. So sorry, everybody. Sorry, 99% of you. Well, you're not getting your health care.
Right. Old crotchety Ben. Old crotchety Joe Manchin.
It makes no sense.
It reminds me, if you've ever been to Disney World and you're, you know, you go through like the different coal mining rides and there's like the old coot sitting there with like the fishing pole and a little dog. Yeah. And they're like, hey, Uncle Joe over there has been dealing with some cattle rustlers. You know, that's like what he is, right?
Yeah.
Back in my day.
Back in my day, I used to do things myself.
Yeah. We didn't have health care. When we broke a bone, we went back to work, and we liked it.
We'd have Uncle Mildred set that bone. That's why my arm looks like this today. Well, you know, Joe Biden has an option here, which is executive order. Because if Joe Manchin is going to be this thorn in his side and he's not going to vote for this, then he can actually bypass Congress and he can do this by executive order. He doesn't need Congress.
Well, he's already proved he's not really willing to do that. He could have done everything that he's ran on when he was trying to get in office. He could have done with executive order, and he has not done any of it.
Yeah, I mean, he loves the idea, as he keeps saying, this is compromise. This is what we get. This is compromise, you know? So this is exciting. You know, we're sitting here watching the effects of compromise while our roads and bridges and infrastructure collapse all around us.
And don't you find it funny that AOC and even Barack Obama are coming out now with their speeches saying, hey, you know, whenever we're doing this stuff, we can't get everything we want, but we can do better. We could do slightly better. It's just like, you know, you need to show up and you need to accept the little morsels that we give you, because we can't give you everything you want. But like, change. What's one thing they've given us? Hey, tell me change. One thing that we've. Yeah, change.
We got change. Yeah, we got a lot of change. Yeah. So Manchin's whole sticking point here is that it's the price of this bill. And look, he's not out of line. The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, has said that this bill would not pay for itself. And like Democrats like to say that, it would actually pay for itself. But here's the thing. If you would actually tax millionaires and you would actually put in place that billionaire tax, then we would be able to pay for infrastructure. And we would be able to cover this. If we would also be able to go after tax cheats. But Joe Manchin doesn't want that, doesn't want any tax increases. So, you know, yeah, now you're concerned about how much this is going to cost. Manchin's opposition could hold up the vote for another few weeks. And by the way, the government doesn't have a few weeks. I was looking at the congressional calendar this morning. There is only, I think it's 12 days left. They're in recess almost all of November. And by the way, we have a debt ceiling that needs to be voted on in early December. It needs to be like, we're going to hit that December 3rd debt ceiling. And Congress is in recess for almost the entire month of November. So we have about 12 legislative days left in Congress for them to do anything on this. That's your Congress, ladies and gentlemen. No family paid leave. Questions about how much money will go towards the environment. You know, child care, elder care. Coming up a little bit later.
No free community college. They pulled free community college out.
Yeah, free community college is pulled out of there. They're lowering now.
They pulled out eyes and dental, but they left in hearing. So just so you know, those of you that have trouble hearing, you're going to be covered, but you're losing your teeth and eyes because those aren't connected to the body.
Right. See no evil, hear evil. And then, of course, Democrats now looking right now to make Joe Manchin happy in pulling out some of these prescription drug reforms. America, as Ula Hula says in our chat. America. God.
Well, I mean, and to be fair, you know, I mean, in a way I understand, because if we made these monumental changes and gave the people what they want, we would move up on the list of like health care and paid family leave and stuff. And we like to be the best of the worst. So, you know, we can't be moving up on those lists. So I get it. I don't want to be at the top of those lists. Can you imagine the pressure that would come with that?
Right. Yeah. Can you imagine being the best? Like if we were the best in education, or we were the best in healthcare, or we had the best food system. We're the best at bombing, though. We're absolutely the best at bombing.
You know, I remember
that nailed down.
You remember back in the day when like Tonka trucks and stuff, and it was like built America, like it meant something to be manufactured in the United States. It meant something it meant something to other countries too, to look at Americans. And America was just this place that, you know, people were just had such the American dream. You know what I mean? And it's like, look at how they must look at us now when they see these lists and see us at the bottom. And they're just like, wow, we have been misled. Like, these are all lies. We do not have it. I was just talking to a guy from Norway yesterday, and he was talking about how they pay 41% in taxes, which we basically do anyway if you're a small business owner, but they pay 41% in taxes, and they have healthcare, college, like no worries whatsoever. The only thing they have to pay out of their money is their rent, their car, whatever, their regular bills. But anything that like is a staple of something they absolutely need to better their lives is free.
Right. Yeah, we're going to talk. I mean, you know, where the whether you're in Portugal, right? Like beautiful Porto, city of Porto, Portugal, where you get, you know, free college, right? Where you get healthcare taken care of, where if you lose your job, the government will take care of you. Now, it's not perfect, right? Same thing in France. It's not perfect. But, you know, you have all throughout Europe. And you get these arguments from the United States. You get these hooligans that go on, you know, Fox News and other places like, you don't want to wind up like Europe. You know, like the guy, that author of that book, Euro Trash, who was all over Fox a few weeks ago, that we shot his whole argument down the other day. And he's like, you know, American people are actually rich. You're doing great right now. Americans are doing fine. Yeah, doing great, aren't you? I mean, like, what planet are you living in? And you're like cloistered, wealthy bubble in Manhattan or something. That you don't want to live like the you know, live like Europe.
Did you ever see the Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story?
No, I've heard about it.
Okay, so it's really funny. So there's Tim Meadow is in there, and he's with these people, and they're in there smoking pot. And Dewey Cox walks in, and he's like, "What are you guys doing?" He's like, "We're smoking pot. You don't want none of this." And he's like, "What? Because it's habit forming." He's like, "No, it's non-habit forming. No, it makes your bad feelings feel good." And he's like, "It sounds like I want that."
Yeah, no, you don't want that. You don't want that. You don't look over there. There's nothing to see over there. There's nothing to see that other people around the world live better than we do. Don't look at that at all.
Yeah,
we've got more to come here on the show today. We do. But I want to tell you about our friends today over at Blue Chew. Oh yeah. By the way, it's No Nut November. You know that?
That's right.
By the way, are you taking part in No Nut?
No, I just ate a Blue Chew 15 minutes ago, so I'm ready. I'm not.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, no, I am not. I could not partake. It's kind of like using your brain. You know, I use my brain every day because I'm trying to thwart Alzheimer's. And I feel like if you don't use it, you lose it. Right.
Exactly.
Even for a month.
Exactly. And that's the way I feel about it. Right. And Blue Chew is going to help you get there. It's really fantastic. Fall is here. We could all use a little stiff breeze. Right. That's right. This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Guys, confidence can take you far in life. It can also help you get, you know, a little bit better in the bedroom, especially when it comes to when you need to step up to the plate. It's World Series time. That's where Blue Chew comes in. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable tablets at a fraction of the cost. And you can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever the opportunity arises. The process is totally simple, by the way. You just go to BlueChew.com and you consult with one of their licensed medical providers. And once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's all done online. No visits to the doctor's office. No awkward conversations. No waiting in line at the pharmacy. And BlueChew's tablets are made in the USA, prepared and shipped direct to your door in discreet packaging. So men everywhere are excited about it. I've actually had people reach out to me via email and they're like, you know, I was a little nervous to try it, you know, but I gotta say thanks, Clayton, for you telling me about them, because it has really done wonders. So you've got to try Blue Chew. It's time to get off the couch, back to work. If your tool needs an upgrade.
And I just realized that we were just talking about Walk Hard, and Walk Hard would be a great theme song for Blue Chew, because the first lyrics are Walk Hard, Hard. Down life's rocky road. <It's> like...
So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, Blue Chew can help. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew for free when you use our promo code INVEST at checkout. That's right. It's just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code INVEST to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. From our friends at Blue Chew. All right. Thanks to them for supporting the show. And what we do here, independent journalism, by the way, we're not bought and sold by the mainstream media or billionaire corporations. So thank you for supporting our show. We do have a daily newsletter, I should point out. It goes out every day. We had 150 new signups last night, 150 Woo-hoo! New people who signed up for our totally free newsletter. So if you did, thank you, and we hope that we bring you value every morning. So when you wake up, over your cup of coffee, you can read the newsletter in about 5-10 minutes and gives you some great news stories. We look at the markets. We look at what's happening. We make you laugh a little bit. We may make you cry. Just go to morninginvest.com and sign up for free, and it'll be delivered to your inbox first thing in the morning. You can get the new one tomorrow morning since you missed today's. All right, let's talk about the Supreme Court, because oral arguments started yesterday in the Texas abortion ban, and there could be new hope for pro-choice individuals. It was really fascinating to watch these justices, specifically the conservative justices, like Brett Kavanaugh, Trump appointee, Elena Kagan, who was an Obama appointee, and then Amy Coney Barrett, obviously another Trump appointee. Really shooting some holes in this thing. I mean, asking some tough questions. And of course, at issue is this idea of the Texas abortion law would allow anyone to basically sue any institution because they are uncomfortable. So the idea is that you, David, if you lived in Texas, could find it reprehensible that there's an abortion clinic doing what it does, right? And so that could bother you personally, even though it has nothing to do with you and your body, right? It has nothing to do with that. You could then sue that abortion clinic and you could win damages at minimum of about $10,000 or more. It could go on. It could go up to the millions if you
isn't
want.
Isn't that like legislated cancel culture?
Yes, that's exactly
and
what
I thought,
it is.
And I thought Republicans were anti-cancel culture.
Interesting, isn't it? So you have yesterday, of course, some conservative justices of the Supreme Court actually showing how smart they are. Really shooting some holes in this, and I listened to a lot of Brett Kavanaugh's oral arguments back and forth, getting a listening from the Texas solicitor who was presenting in front of him, and to listen to that Texas solicitor basically answering Brett Kavanaugh's questions. He's like, now let me just be clear, Brett Kavanaugh saying, this could in fact spill over into anything. Second Amendment rights, right? Gun control, guns, right? So if you're not happy with the fact that this gun shop sold a gun and someone ends up getting killed or not even getting killed, you just sue them because you don't like guns. You could sue them, right? Yes, basically it could spill over anything. Speech, guns, where does it stop? So it's interesting to hear these conservative justices. I want to play Brett Kavanaugh's statement. So in case we didn't hear it because Grover was barking earlier. Let's try this again. Here's Brett Kavanaugh, Trump appointee, questioning the legitimacy of this law.
It could be free speech rights. It could be free exercise of religion rights. It could be Second Amendment rights. If this position is accepted here, the theory of the amicus brief is that it can be easily replicated in other states that disfavor other constitutional rights.
Well, and that's exactly what I was going to say is like, this sets a precedent. Like once a precedent is set, then they can like, oh, this one, we got this through. Oh, now we can like, this is like, how do we keep like censoring and taking away free speech and taking like, and just cancel, right. cancel to where it's like, you're only getting establishment information.
Right. Yeah. And it's already happening to your point. I mean, it's already happening in Florida. Florida's lining up to copy off of what Texas has done. So, you know, you think, and by the way, North Dakota as well. So you think what Texas does is going to be just in Texas. No. This is going to spill over into all kinds of other areas. So you had Elena Kagan saying at one point, she said, and I was trying to grab the sound button, I couldn't. But she said, I listened to her oral argument. She says, wow, what geniuses came up with this law? Like, I mean, so if you're wondering where this is going, and you are a supporter of just common sense and pro-choice, but common sense more importantly, you know, I think we see where this is going. And it was interesting, though, to hear the closing arguments from Elizabeth Prolegar. She's the U.S. Solicitor General. By the way, she crushed it. She was just finally confirmed last Friday. Imagine you're confirmed to an office and then like, Elizabeth, we need you to go in front of the Supreme Court next week. On abortion. Like, what? Can I at least get like a starter job or something to warm me up to that? No. This is the World Series. Bottom of the ninth, you know, bases loaded. You need to step up to the plate. Here is how her closing argument summed it all up. And I thought this was a grand slam. This was like a Denny's grand slam. Listen to how she put this.
The final point is to just step back for a moment and think about the startling implications of Texas's argument here. Across the arguments this morning, Texas's position is that no one can sue, not the women whose rights are most directly affected, not the providers who have been chilled in being able to provide those women with care, and not the United States in this suit. They say that federal courts just have no authority under existing law to provide any mechanism to redress that harm. And if that is true, if a state can just take this simple mechanism of taking its enforcement authority and giving it to the general public, backed up with a bounty of $10,000 or $1 million, if they can do that, then no constitutional right is safe. No constitutional decision from this court is safe. That would be an intolerable state of affairs, and it cannot be the law. Our constitutional guarantees cannot be that fragile, and the supremacy of federal law cannot be that easily subject to manipulation. So we would ask this court to hold that the United States can proceed with this action and affirm the preliminary injunction entered by the district court and immediately vacate the stay that the Fifth Circuit entered in this case so that Texas cannot continue to deny women in its borders a right protected by this court's precedents one day longer.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.
Wow. Powerful. So she nailed it. She nailed it. And basically asking, look, you know, put this thing in place right now. Allow these things to move forward until this is decided. You know, allow women to be able to get the health care they need. Because if we have to wait for this to make its way through the courts, we could be waiting years. So the argument is, and even Brett Kavanaugh asked that question. He's like, you know, if we wait on this, then there's going to be years. It could potentially take 3-4 years before someone could get the adequate health care that they need. To which the person arguing on the who was pro-law was like, yeah, that could happen. So I think if you're reading the court, if you're a court reporter and you're studying the way that the mood of this is going, it seems clear, but I don't want to get my hopes up on this, that sanity will prevail in this. But again, think about it. It could trickle over to religion. Right. So maybe, David, you practice a type of religion and a mall allowed you to do like a prayer group or something or whatever in the mall. Well, I could sue the mall because I just don't like your type of religion. Right. That's basically what this would allow. And that's exactly what Justice Kavanaugh was saying, that this could spill over to religion, over to other constitutional rights.
And even
I just don't like it. I'm going to sue.
Yeah, I was just thinking like of another analogy, like somebody standing on a street corner with a sign, and then they all of a sudden they're handed paper, a summons paper, like we're taking your court. What is this? Well, the guy across the street does not like your sign, so he's suing you.
Right.
Yeah. Like they're like
you're
setting
a city.
Yeah.
Or you could sue the city because that's a city sidewalk. And now I'm going to sue the city of whatever, you know, East Hanover, whatever, because there was some guy that was out there with a sign.
Our society is too litigious already. Like to give them, like to open this up, like that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's Pandora's box.
Yeah.
So we'll be watching this closely. That was again the first day of oral arguments in this, but I think if you're just focusing on the conservative justices yesterday, it did not bode well for that Virginia or that Texas law. And I think if you're in Florida and you're seeing that your state now is moving towards also trying to pass the same law, you're probably thinking, maybe we want to put the brakes on this, not waste our time until we find out what the Supremes do about all of this. Let me know your thoughts on this in the chat below. Very interesting. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk about Virginia. It is election day in Virginia, and there are a couple of things we need to be watching there right now. Poll numbers are crazy today in Virginia. We're the very latest on that. And we're also going to look at Finland today. This story is going to blow you away. And if it doesn't make you angry, it doesn't make you want to like get out there and say, we got to make a change in the United States, then your brain is not hooked up right. So we'll get to that in a moment. But first, I want to tell you about HelloFresh, by the way. So get this. I was looking at HelloFresh's stock today, surging. You know why? Because we are in a supply crunch right now. We are paying way more for groceries at the grocery store than ever before, right? Up 28% we're seeing across the board. And the reason I think that HelloFresh is surging and doing so well, you thought, oh, they'd probably just be doing well during the pandemic. No, no, no. They're doing really well because people know that they don't want to pay more for groceries. And so what HelloFresh is able to do is get farm fresh ingredients, and they're able to deliver it right to your front door. And they're able to do it in such a way where you're saving a boatload of money. So it makes it. Why would you then go to the grocery store? Why would you want to pay more and get ingredients that aren't as fresh and aren't locally sourced and sustainable and also providing you great recipes. And you can get 14 free meals too for just trying it out. That's another reason that they're crushing it right now. You know, HelloFresh really just takes the stress out of meal planning. On top of it, they're saving you money. HelloFresh offers 50 menu and market items to choose from every week, including vegetarian, calorie smart, gourmet options. They have plenty of variety. And HelloFresh isn't just for meals. They have a marketplace. They have a variety of add-ons for breakfast, desserts, seasonal snacks like Pillsbury pumpkin cookie dough. Holy smokes. Pillsbury pumpkin cookie dough. Are you kidding me? They have the flexibility you need to easily customize your orders on the app within minutes. You can change your delivery day. Maybe you're taking a vacation, so the food, you know, you're not going to be home. Good. Change your days. Doesn't matter. Put it hold for while you're on vacation. You can switch it up. You want more? You got only just two people living at your house? Great. Do it for two. Do it for a whole family? Great. You can switch the size. You can do a family feast. You can do anything you want. Really great value and save a boatload of money. 30% cheaper than going to the grocery store. So why? And now you're going to get 14 free meals and they're adding three free gifts. So you're going to get three free gifts as well. All you need to do is like, go to Hello. Yeah.
Like animated gifs?
No. Gifts. Gifts. Oh, okay. No, not a gif.
Okay.
No, an actual gift you'll get. So go to HelloFresh.com/invest14 and use that code invest14 and get 14 free meals and three free gifts. Gifts. Again, go to HelloFresh.com/invest14. Use code invest14 for up to 14 free meals and three free gifts.
And yes. Understand, they are great meals. It's not like, you know, if you're somebody who likes to cook already for your family, but like it's, you know, like measuring out the ingredients and all that stuff is kind of a pain. They measure everything out. Like if it calls for Parmesan cheese, they give you little packets of Parmesan cheese. If it calls for, you know, a squeeze of lemon, you've got a lemon in there. Like it's just so convenient because you just pull out the bag that has the individual ingredients and you make your meal and boom, you're good to go. And they're really good.
Yeah, and you're going to save 30% off your grocery store prices.
Yeah.
So right now, with the prices of everything going up, HelloFresh is a game changer. No wonder their stock is surging because so many people are signing up for it. So makes sense. Anyway, check them out, HelloFresh.com.
We put hemp seed in a lot of stuff, and the hemp seed I went to get this weekend was $19.99 a pound.
Oh. What?
For hemp seed. Yeah.
You also texted me a picture the other day of how much it costs for bullion cubes.
Yeah, $9 for bullion.
Bullion?
Yeah.
Like bullion is the stuff you drink or eat when you're like sick, yeah. Right? Because it has nothing in it. It's just like it's the stock.
Yeah.
$9. Unbelievable. Not surprising though. I mean, we are in an absolute supply crunch right now and it's bad. It's getting bad. Let's talk about the state of Virginia. So we've got an election going on today in a couple of different states, and the Virginia's governor race particularly is coming down to momentum against math right now, literally this afternoon. So you've got Glenn Youngkin, the GOP nominee, and, you know, it's funny because they haven't been able to talk about Glenn Youngkin's money. You know, he's a Wall Street guy, so they haven't been able to really call out the fact that he's been, you know, multimillionaire. And, you know, the reason is because Terry McAuliffe is also very rich. So they don't get to play that game, right? Glenn Youngkin, the GOP nominee, has been surging in the polls in the run-up to Election Day. And just look at these rallies, by the way. Like his rallies, according to reports from a couple of my reporter friends who've been on the ground there, they're like Trump rallies. They're saying that, you know, it's very much like a MAGA rally. It's very energetic. There's a lot of people there. But former Terry McAuliffe, the Democratic candidate, his stuff is not as exciting. There haven't been as many people there. So if you just kind of go by the enthusiasm gap right now, he's got it. Glenn Youngkin has got it right now. It's, you know, I just think it's interesting to see this, you know, this difference. And what's also interesting with Glenn Youngkin is that he hasn't really relied on Trump at all. And some people are calling him like Trump light, you know, like Coors Light, like Trump light. That he had, and it may be a path forward for Republicans who are kind of trying to figure out how do you deal with Trump in the mix. Well, what he did was he reached out to these suburban moms and dads in areas where Terry McAuliffe or Joe Biden did really well against Trump. And they were not happy with some of Trump's messaging and things like that. So he, number one, he didn't say anything stupid. So he's been very, very careful not saying anything stupid. And he's also talked about safety. He's talked about jobs. He's talked about education. And President Trump hasn't even campaigned for him at all. He did like a televised thing or a telly, you know, like a Zoom thing where he said, yeah, he's a good guy. But that's it. He hasn't had him at any rallies and he's kind of separated himself from it. But Terry McAuliffe, on the other hand, the Democratic candidate, you know, is in a state that President Biden carried by 10 points only a year ago, a landslide. And he's just, I mean, literally neck and neck right now. I have to say, though, if this election continued much longer, I don't think there's a chance in hell that he wins. I think right now all the energy and enthusiasm is for Glenn Youngkin in this very, very, I don't know, blue state, but kind of a purple state. And now if it leans back, we could have a Republican governor. This could be a huge, huge blow for President Biden moving forward and Democrats moving forward in the midterms. I mean, the fact that President Trump really isn't involved in this and Democrats have nothing to hang their hat on. If you really want to look at why this is such a big issue, I think you can say, well, Terry McAuliffe, what is he able to run on? What he's been running on in the past few weeks is all negativity. And he just keeps trying to tie Glenn Youngkin to Donald Trump. He keeps trying to say that, you know, he's a Trump guy. He's a Trump guy. But what does Terry McAuliffe have really to hang his hat on? Can he point to a President Biden agenda that is the reason you should reelect him as your governor? You know, that here's what you get when you vote for Democrats. You know, you're going to get climate change initiatives. You're going to get job creation. You're going to get a new infrastructure package.
Well, and to be fair, I think I heard on Secular Talk yesterday that 60% or something like that of people that voted for Biden voted for him because he wasn't Trump.
Yeah, exactly. So you're just voting because you're just like, I don't want Trump, so I don't care who he is. I don't care if the guy is 85 years old and can't put a word together. I'll take him, you know, and that's literally what happened. So a core tenet right now of what's being thrown around in this whole thing is critical race theory. A lot of people ask, like, well, why are you voting for Glenn Youngkin? You know, what's the issue here? What's the one of the main issues that you're voting on right now? And that is critical race theory. A number of months ago, Terry McAuliffe made a huge mistake when he was asked, he blurted out that he believed that, you know, no parent should tell a teacher what they should be taught in school. And then later in that same speech, he said, I love teachers. And that was all edited out. But he didn't do damage control quickly enough. He didn't come out and say, hey, you know what? I believe that the education department should be dictating what our children are learning. I love teachers, but parents shouldn't be driving that narrative. And he didn't. He was on damage control. And so this critical race theory, what's being taught in schools, education has been a core issue in this entire race. And critical race theory is at the heart of it. What they found is that a lot of people are going out and throwing their support behind Glenn Youngkin, but they don't even know why. They don't even know what critical race theory is. So when asked about this, they're saying, well, this is a top issue for us, education and critical race theory. Oh, yeah, what is it? Well, here's what it is. Here's the answer.
What's the most important issue in the governor's race here in Virginia?
Getting back to the basics of teaching children, not teaching them critical race theory.
And what is critical race theory?
Well, I'm not going to get into the specifics of it because I don't understand it that much, but it's something that I don't, what little bit that I know, I don't care for.
And what have you heard that you don't?
Well,
that you
I'm
don't
not, like? I'm not going to, you know, I don't have that much knowledge on it, but okay. It's something that I don't care for.
Yeah. Well said. It's American voters right here. Single issue voters. This is why I'm voting for Glenn Youngkin, because he wants to get rid of any kind of critical race theory. What is it? I don't know, but I just don't like it. So there are a couple of things to watch tonight as these votes come in. How does Glenn Youngkin do specifically in the suburbs, in an area where, again, Biden crushed it? So what do these suburban voters do? Do they go with Glenn Youngkin, a Republican, where Trump had a lot of trouble? That would be really telling going forward. And you have these suburban moms that say, you know, I don't feel like that this president has our best interests at heart, President Biden. And if Terry McAuliffe represents that Democratic Party, and make no mistake about it, I mean, Terry McAuliffe is a Clinton Democrat. He is absolutely a Biden-Clinton Democrat, right? He is as middle of the road, cut from the same cloth as those guys. Always has been. He's a Hillary Clinton Democrat. So if he loses, this could be real trouble. And it may be a sign that progressives need to stand stronger. You know, people like, you know, seeing, because we had obviously the people like Terry McAuliffe in the last round of elections actually lost House seats. The people that aligned themselves with Hillary Clinton and they were that type of Democrat lost House seats. And the people that won were progressives.
Well, that's the thing. Like they threw Biden out there because they assume everybody wants a centrist, but they don't. People do not want that. People don't want Biden. Like the only reason Biden won is because he wasn't Trump. And he's proved that he didn't, like, he's not doing anything he said. So, like, now, look what he's tarnishing the Democratic Party. So, Republicans are definitely going to win a lot more this next round because people aren't going to trust Democrats now. And the thing is, like, you're right. Like, the people that run on, like AOC, for instance, she ran on, you know, getting Medicare for all. And not in 100 years, she said she was going to challenge Nancy Pelosi and get it now. And then they get in there and they prove that that's not what she's doing. They have not used any of their power. So it's like now people are going to stop believing that progressives are going to do anything because all these people run on this stuff that they're going to do. And they get in there and they all do nothing. You know, even Bernie Sanders, he had a lot of power coming out of the elections that he could have pushed Joe Biden for legalizing marijuana and all these things that he could have done in executive order that Bernie Sanders could have negotiated. But he didn't. He didn't negotiate anything at the time he had power. And so these people just don't use the power that they have. And that should show you right there that they're careerists. They're worried more about their political career than they are helping you. And it's unfortunate, but it's true.
Yeah. And they go where the political wind takes them. And so for Terry McAuliffe, you know, he went where the political, the Biden mandating vaccine wind took him. Because in the two debates, I don't know if you had a chance to watch either of the debates. They're actually pretty good. But boy, Terry McAuliffe just kept hammering. Just kept hammering Glenn Youngkin on this issue of mandates, and you know, kept saying, you know, you're gonna regret this. You know, he kept saying basically that, you know, Youngkin, you're in trouble for opposing mandates. That public employees and workers at private businesses need to get vaccinated against coronavirus. So he was attacking him in these debates. You know, we need these mandates. And I've said here on the show that I think the mandates, the vaccine mandates, could be probably President Biden's worst mistake of his presidency. And we'll see, right? Like, I'm pro-vaccine. I had the vaccine. But, boy, to mandate this with all of the questions surrounding this and then making the laws around whether or not you can go into a place if you've got a vaccine card, even though we know you're just as likely to transmit.
Well, you and know, hey, and I'm totally cool. Don't. Yeah, and I'm totally cool with that. Like, you wanna, you know, if you are gonna mandate the adults or whatever, but like now it's pushing over to kids, and that really scares me. Like that part of it scares the crap out of me.
Yeah, and we personally still don't have a. I mean, the science is still so such a mess right now. We're being told like, oh, if you had a J&J vaccine, then you definitely need to get a booster. And now, I mean. So again, to call out this opponent to say that, you know, you're making a mistake if you don't believe in these mandates. Well, guess what? I think maybe it turns out that a majority of people in Virginia don't want it also, you know. So you come out on the side of this, so supporting President Biden. And when someone says, well, what has President Biden actually done that you're supportive of? And you're tying your hat, you're tying your star to that wagon,
hitching your wagon to the post or something like that.
Can anyone help us out in the chat? What is that idiom? Hitching my star to your wagon? I don't know what it is.
It's something about post and wagon. I know that the post and wagon are in there.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, you know, right now we've got Trump country that's really under the microscope in all of this. And, you know, if McAuliffe's margins in the rich suburbs, turning out those Republican base of Trump fans in rural areas. You know, for instance, the 9th district in Virginia, it's called the Fighting 9th, kind of a famous district. It's been, it stretches from outskirts of Roanoke to the southwestern tip of the state. It's gotten redder over the past decade, and McAuliffe's GOP opponent back in 2013, Ken Cuccinelli, got 61% there, but Trump actually won by 70%. He had 70% in that neck of the woods. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, like, the ninth tonight. I'll be watching those districts specifically to see how many Republicans get out. You know, I was seeing about the enthusiasm piece of this as well. And what's interesting on the enthusiasm side is that Democrats, there's no Trump in this. So apparently the turnout might be much lower for Democrats because they don't have, like, the enthusiasm of trying to go out there and try to fight a Trump. And I think that's why Terry McAuliffe is pushing so hard right now to kind of paint his opponent as a Trump guy, even though, okay, he's not really even been, he's not even campaigned in Virginia on behalf of him. So, anyway, Clayton, all eyes, yeah.
Curb your enthusiasm, please. And it's hitch your wagon to a star. I've never heard that. That's the idiom. I've never heard that.
Hitch your wagon to my star. Yeah, you hitched your wagon to his star. That's right.
Huh. I have never heard that.
Thank you for that. The last story I want to talk about today is Finland. Do you remember that Monty Python song, Finland, Finland, Finland?
I do.
The place where I quite want to be. Well, there's been a lot of discussion in the United States over the past. The reason I want to talk about Finland, and you should pay everyone watching right now, smash that like button, subscribe to the channel if you're not already a subscriber, and pay close attention to this story. This is, I think, is a really interesting piece of education here, and can all, you know, make us smarter about the child finance system in the United States. So there's been a lot of attention over the past few weeks about child care in the United States, actually over the last year, right, where you have people that couldn't go back to a job because child care in the United States has been so expensive that they can't afford to pay for child care, so they've had to leave their job, okay, during the pandemic. And also, child care workers are paid so low. Those people that work at daycares, right, or even nursery, are paid really low. And so how do we fix that, right? The argument, obviously, as part of this infrastructure package under President Biden has been, you know, can we pay these people, first of all, what they should be paid? They're taking care of our youngest in their most formative years, teaching them social skills and how to interact with other children. Very, very important stuff, right? Like, many people argue that those years in a school, in a classroom environment with other kids, are arguably maybe even more important than your elementary school years. But in America, there hasn't been a priority on this. So we can't afford to pay for these teachers, and parents can't afford to do it, so they're forced to stay home, and they can't go back to the job, or they can't maybe go to school, improve themselves, you know, get a degree, or take that job that they want, because the child care structure in the United States is just garbage, among the many things the United States sucks at. But Finland, on the other hand, has an unbelievable public child care system that, as the Jacobin magazine this week pointed out, did a really in-depth piece on this, and good for them, puts the rest of the world to absolute shame, does Finland. In Finland, listen to this, 70% of preschool children attend a full daycare service. 70%. Supported by the government.
Can you elaborate on what a full daycare service is? Is that like all day daycare? Because a lot of preschool or those services in the United States are like half a day, probably don't include any food, don't include, you know.
Right. So... and I know you're being facetious, but so daycare in Finland, let me lay out what exactly it looks like, is a place for children not only to engage in play, okay, they get nutritious meals, they improve their immune systems by being around other children, but also prepare for education in the wider society. The children are cared for by skilled caretakers, like school teachers. Early childhood education teachers in Finland have been university educated since 1995. You cannot teach these children unless you have a university education. In early childhood development, by the way.
The most important part of their life.
Yeah. Like, my sister got her master's degree in early childhood development. And if you think you understand children, you don't until you actually start studying what goes into the early childhood development. And, you know, you think you have an idea about how you think your child should be educated until you actually meet someone who's spent years studying it. And you realize, whoa, 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 they know way more than I ever will, you know. And so this idea of daycare for children existed way before then, of course. It's existed for as long as people have opted to care for each other's children for free in order for other people to work. So the first kindergarten in Finland, intended for children of workers in the working class suburbs of Helsinki, Finland, started in 1888. 4 years later, the education for kindergarten teachers began. Finland then, an autonomous part of Russia at the time, was the first Nordic country to introduce this. And it goes on from there. But what's interesting is that in Finland, you'll see when you walk around Finland this time of the year, where all of the leaves are changing, you're seeing, you know, the leaves falling, the red leaves falling, you'll see neon pink and yellow popping up all over the place, as they point out. Why? Because they're the reflective vests that little toddlers wear. And they go out to explore the parks with the teachers, and they're doing little science projects and stuff in the park. And you'll see these kids all over the place. The cities and parks are filled with these daycare teachers. The country's free. It's free.
But I imagine those teachers probably make crap salary. Like, they probably can barely live, right? And they probably have to pay for their own supplies and, you know, like...
No.
No?
No, no.
What?
It's all taken care of by the government. It's all taken care of by the government. In Finland, these sites are normal, according to the piece. The country's free or inexpensive public and private daycare is, in many suburbs, so extensive that it seems like every block must have one of these daycare centers. This autumn, the author writes, my 18-month-old daughter has started in hers a city-run public daycare right next to our home.
I bet you conservatives in Finland are just irate and going nuts and protesting this every day, aren't they? Standing outside these parks with signs like communists, socialists. Like, what are you doing to our children, right?
No, in fact, it was started by the conservatives.
What?
In Finland.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
Skilled caretakers that started this back in 1888. In fact... The process, which was always aided by efforts of the cross-party MPs, particularly women in more recent times, of the subjective right has come under fire, especially from the right itself, as it includes cases in which one parent stays at home, for example, due to unemployment. The fact that parents may stay at home while recovering from mental issues, for instance, was overlooked. So what happened is they've now allowed that to be a part of the reason why they can place a child in child care, even if one parent is still at home.
Communists.
And what they're saying is that what's interesting is that when you're, so what does it mean to have daycare? It means that if I want, it doesn't mean that I have to be working in order to have a child in daycare. It's just a part of the culture because they're going to get the best education possible. So not only could I be working and my child could be in daycare in Finland, but I could also be going to university. Imagine that. Free university. Okay. I'm going to free university in Finland. And my child is taken care of in free childcare.
So I just got a quick question. So at what point in the child's life, so the child gets all that for free and all that stuff. So at what point in the where does the stress come in? Where do the predators, like the debt predators, the credit card predators and all that stuff, like when do they come into play? I just want to know when Finland kids' lives start getting pressured, you know, with debt.
They don't have it.
What?
United States is a debt society. Finland is not. You know, it's very difficult to get a credit card. And when you get a credit card, you're limited. Personal credit card, like if you try to get a credit card in Europe, good luck. No one uses credit cards. They use debit cards. So you have to have that amount of money you're going to spend in your bank account, right? They're not a debt society like the United States. You want to get a credit card in Portugal, you can get a $500 limit. And that €500 euro better be in your bank account in order to pay for the items that you're going to buy on a credit.
You know what I'd like to know? I would like to know the difference in the suicide rate for a country like that versus here, a debt society versus a society that, you know, because if you think about that, that child from the moment they're born, like I'm sure there's still bad homes and stuff like that. Like that, we can't pretend like that doesn't exist. But for the most part, these kids get a very good, healthy first start, fresh start in life that a lot of kids don't get here because the parents are so stressed they can't afford daycare, so they're keeping them out of daycare. They're not socializing them. They're not getting any kind of, you know, and they're eating McDonald's food every day because it's a dollar menu. So they're eating crap food. They're obese. You know, like there's all these issues that they deal with that gives them stress at the beginning of their lives. Kids should not be stressed at the beginning of their life. They need to be kids. They need to live. And we don't allow that in this country. And now they can't even get maternity leave. That was pulled from this bill that's being proposed. And that's the important time that a kid spends with their mother or whatever, like the development stage. Like, and we don't put any, like, we don't put anything in our children. I mean, Whitney Houston, you know, like that song, children are the future. We need to invest in them, like, and having them not be stressed. I can't believe how far removed from that we are.
David Payne in our chat says, how can I buy a home in Finland? Exactly. I just want to read to you an excerpt from this because this is really, really striking. Many families will end up choosing to utilize daycare at some times and to keep the children at home at other times. Listen to this. Another option is family-based daycare, which sees children cared for by a trained worker in their own homes or in someone else's home instead of a daycare facility. Whatever choice families make, they can partake in the holistic network of institutions making up the Nordic welfare state. This welfare state allows for a variety in the specifics. Political parties and families debate the best approaches to implementation and use. Some, for example, disagree on how young kids should be, how young they should be when they start daycare. Nevertheless, at all point, some parents, no matter their ideology or views on childcare, will have the option available. Conservative, liberal, and socialist parents send their kids to the same daycares, confident they will be cared for and given the opportunity to learn new things.
Because they probably don't push politics like they do here in schools.
Right. It's just to take care of the children. The daycare does not intend to replace the family. It complements its efforts and works hand in hand with the family.
Well, I'm going to say that home care, if they go to your home, that's got to be expensive. Holy cow. How do people afford it?
The government pays for it.
What? For home care too?
Yes. Whatever you choose. Again, this is why people don't move away, right? When people are, the thing, like, you want to move to Norway? Great. You're going to find that, like, the jobs are in Norway are, like, all Norwegian people are doing these jobs. They're not moving to the U.S. to live the American dream. They're like, no, we're staying here in Norway. Because why? Why would you want to leave Norway? Why would you want to leave Denmark? Why would you want to leave Finland? No wonder the happiness index in these places is off the charts. And by the way, I should mention, like, when you go to Denmark, I mean, it does, at this time of year, it gets dark at like 4:30 in the afternoon, right? But that doesn't stop. What does that matter? Just because it gets dark early and you think, oh, it's darker a lot more here and it's colder, still the happiest place in the world. Why? Because they take care of their people. You don't have this anxiety and stress about how you're going to provide for your family. They have a term in Dutch called hoike. I think it's called. I think I'm saying it right. If any Dutch folks are watching right now, please correct me. The exact pronunciation of it, hoike. I think it's H-U, hoike. Hoike. Am I saying this right? H-U-I-G-A. I think I'm saying
hoika summer summon. No, I was thinking there's hookah.
No, I need the name of it. Hoika. It's a Dutch term, if I'm not mistaken, or a Danish term. What am I saying? Danish, right? Anyway,
yeah.
Where in, like, in Copenhagen and those areas where it gets dark, the idea is, like, it's a word that it means like cozy. And you like live, you know, to, well, have Mork, a whole,
it says Mork it? Means dark, Mork in, no, Danish.
I'm wishing the name, there's a whole book on it. Let me see, Denmark. I'm going to look this up. Denmark. I want to get this right. Denmark hoike. They even had a commercial for it. Anyway, it's a term that basically means cozy. And it doesn't even mean cozy. It means, like, when you have friends over, you shouldn't have more than, like, they outline, you shouldn't have more than six people over, Because more than that, then you don't have hoika. You don't have the coziness that you get from like a small group of people talking and having conversation and dinner with the candles lit in this like beautiful little environment. And so even though it's cold outside, they even have lights. Like the lighting is so important, like the type of lamps that you get. So the people say, oh, that's not hoika. That's not hoika, because it's not in keeping with the coziness and like in the coziness and the warmth of this country. And I just love that. There's a whole book written on it about that type of gathering and how to have that kind of life. No one's seeing it here in the chat. I wish, I can't find it off the top. I'll tomorrow on the show.
It's kind of like Hawaii, aloha, to live aloha.
Yeah. They even did a whole commercial on it recently. Hoika. Man, I can't believe no one can find this. Hoika. Anyway, so that's the point. That they, you know, that they're not moving away from these areas. They're staying in these towns. They're staying there because of how much it, you know, what happiness it brings to them and that they're taken care of. I guess no one can find it. I've never stumped the chat room
before. The year of Haig.
How do you spell
Hygge. It says the Danish obsession with getting cozy.
Yeah, Hygge. How do you pronounce it? Okay. What is Hygge? Here we go.
The year of Hygge.
Hygge. Yeah. Okay. Here it is. Hard to explain and even harder pronounce. The Danish word Hygge, pronounced Hygge. Okay. It's pronounced Hygge. Has exploded in popularity around the world. It translates roughly to coziness. Okay, I was right.
Yeah.
But it means so much more than that. What is hygge really? It means, in essence, means creating a warm atmosphere and enjoying the good things in life with good people. The warm glow of candlelight is hygge. Cozying up with a loved one for a movie, that's hygge. There's nothing more hygge than sitting around with friends and family and discussing the big and small things in life. That's why the Danes are some of the most happy people in the world. I love that.
It is awesome.
Isn't that cool?
Mm-hmm.
Hygge. So now you know. There's a good book about it. Let me see if I can find it. What is it?
Hygge.
See if I can find it here on the old.
We need more of that here.
Yeah, this is the book. This is a good book. If you're interested in this, you want to learn about it. It's just a sweet book. You know, it's a good, like, cozy book maybe to read during the holidays or something. The Little Book of Hygge, Danish Secrets to Happy Living. Danish Secrets to Happy Living. Why are they the happiest people in the world? Even though it gets dark at 4 in the afternoon, you know, doesn't always have to be sunny like in San Diego for people to be happy.
Or Philadelphia.
Childcare, you know, a social safety net that takes care of people. A lack of anxiety about where you're going to be able to get money to provide food, put food on your table.
Could you imagine what life would be like in this country and what other countries would think of us if we didn't, we focused on global aid rather than war, and we took care of the American people?
It'd be amazing. Well, you know, we got laughed at. Remember when, I forget who was running at one point that wanted to change the Department of Defense to the Department of Peace. And yeah. they were laughed at, right? And they were made in to be like, what a wimp that guy is. Yeah, like, oh, wait a minute. So, or the War Department or whatever it was. You know, it was like somebody was going to switch it, wanted it to be like the Department of Peace. Yeah,
could you imagine
that priority?
Yeah, imagine if you were a global force for peace, right? Force. I don't think you say force, but anyway, if you were all about peace, yet you still had what you needed to back it. If you did get it, like, and people knew you had a good military, but your military was out there doing good, you would, I think, you would get far more respect around the world, and people would still know that if you messed with us, if you came here. You know, our defenses are supposed to just be on our borders. We're not supposed to be over nation building and expanding an empire. We're supposed to be protecting these borders. And if we I would just looked at a stat yesterday that 2% of Elon Musk's wealth could end global hunger. Global 2%.
And to his credit, he tweeted, he said, if that's the case, if we can show that that can happen, I will sell Tesla stock in order to make that happen.
That's awesome.
Good for him. He said, I absolutely would do it. Like, if you can show me, like, how are we going to do that? I would absolutely give money to make sure that that happens.
But instead we have to beat the war drums and spend 10 times more than all the other superpowers combined. So we spend more than all those other countries, all the other, like Russia, China, all them, all of their militaries. We spend 10 times more than they combined.
Right. Just on bombing.
Just on bombing.
Imagine if we would have, you know, but we get made fun of. Like, I love, like, in the United States, there would never be something like Huga. Right. There would never be something like this where we would say, yeah, in the United States, you know, what we really embrace here is coziness and tranquility and happiness. It's like, come on, be tough, America. We'll put a boot in your ass. That's the American way.
During the Obama administration, we dropped so many bombs, we ran out. We actually ran out of bombs.
And people say, oh, yeah, Biden, you know, or, you know, Obama. Yeah, he really pulled back on war and, you know, got rid of that George W. Bush. It's like, no, actually doubled what George W. Bush was doing. So it never ends. Never ends. No. Hygge. Nope. We should all have a little hygge in our life. Any super chats today as we wrap things up here on the show? Before we get there, while you're looking up the super chats, don't forget we have our daily. Oh, I wanted to tell you about my YouTube channel. If you're interested in learning how to make money, and you're interested in learning how to navigate this corrupt government banking system right now, head on over to youtube.com/ClaytonMorris. That's my YouTube channel where I teach you about finance and how to make sure that you're not getting screwed by this system. I just published a video on Tesla last night, so go check that video out. I also just published this video on Kathy Wood. So two new videos within the last few hours. Go check those out. Again, youtube.com/ClaytonMorris, where we specifically talk about investing. I talk about precious metals, real estate, and crypto, as well as stocks that I'm holding in long term. So go check those things out so you can see about the markets. I have a couple of videos I'm working on right now about the coming state of the inflation issue in the United States and what the Federal Reserve is set to do this week. So I'll dive more deeply into that over there if you're interested. Sorry.
All right. Super chats. We've got Rumpel Gold. I wrap filming for my character today.
Way to go. So Rumpel, she, for those of you who don't know, in our chat, Rumpel is in the new House of Dragons show, which is a prequel to Game of Thrones, right? To the, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think so. It's 400 years prior. I think 400.
Congratulations. So I can't wait to watch that. That'll be on HBO. But yeah, Rumpel on the set filming the Game of Thrones show listens to our show. And that's super cool.
Yeah, and if you happen to see Amelia Clark, I know she's not part of it, but if you happen to see her, tell her I said hello and that you know, she's always welcome here. So
yeah, the Morning Invest show, we're really big fans of hers.
Yeah, really big fans. Tony Joslin, how many crypto wallets do I need, bro?
I mean, crypto, well, there's a couple of crypto wallets. A hardware wallet, I recommend the Ledger hardware wallet. It's actual physical, like USB hardware. So that's like a cold storage wallet. Ledger is the one I use. And then, you know, online version, I've got a few. I've got a few ones that you have on an exchange, like, you know, like Coinbase or BlockFi. So it really depends on what exchanges you're using. But as far as like a hardware wallet, you really only need one.
And then we have Dwayne Gordon. It would seem that every time we are building this reconciliation build back, there are less bricks to work with. Yeah.
Yeah. Build back blah. Yeah. Not build back better.
Just like I asked Clayton at the beginning of the week, because I'm still very curious, because I have looked and I can't find anything where we actually, as the people, got what we wanted in a bill. I mean, you look at any time there's a crisis, anytime the economy, like there's a pandemic, what do? They send $5 trillion to businesses and they give us what? Like, what is the total amount that we've gotten in stimulus? We got like $1,200 and a $600, right? Or did we even get that? I don't even remember what all we got, but that's all we got during a pandemic. We did get unemployment for a little while, But like, what have we gotten? And so it's like they keep pulling out everything that benefits us. And I guarantee you that when this bill is all complete and it's ready to go out and they're all in agreement and they're all signing it, there's going to be nothing in there for us. Maybe some crumbs, but
yeah, it'll be crumbs.
It'll be crumbs, like usual. And we keep putting our faith in these people. Oh, vote for Biden and you're going to get your $2,000 checks and everything's going to be great because the Democrats are going to have control. We're going to get health care. We're going to get paid family leave. We're going to get all these wonderful things. Nope. Take that out. Nope. Take that out. College debt. Nope. Take that out. We can't do that. No, like everything that they ran on, every single thing. And when are we going to stop trusting these people with what they say? You got to look at what they're doing. Let me turn off this other music. Play us out.
Oh, no, no, no. Any more super chats?
Nope, that's it.
Out of tune. Sorry.
You got any originals?
No. Build back better, better suck my... Sorry. Build back better in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to die on the side of the road. All my life, you were always waiting for the... Anyway, thank you, everyone. I've officially lost my voice, and this cold persists. Much love to all of you. Yeah, we'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Natalie will be back. I just saw my mother-in-law pop up here in the studio. So she is
here. Did she wave?
Say hi. She did wave. She was like, oh, I'll be quiet. I'll be quiet. So I'm going to say hi to her and her husband. And so tomorrow Natalie will be back. And don't forget to check out my other YouTube channel. Again, that's youtube.com/Clayton Morris. I'd love for you to... We're almost at 20,000 subscribers. I'd love for anyone who's interested in learning how to make money and build wealth, come on over here and subscribe, and we'll teach you how to do that on this channel.
We need to update your cover image.
Yeah, this one's ugly.
Yeah, give Grim and I access today and we can...
Okay, we got to get that
updated. That all hooked up. Yeah,
so come on over there. We're putting a lot of hard work into these videos. Really, really, the team is doing an amazing job, and we're really deep diving some of these picks. And so come on over here and check it out. And if you got a Weeble account, like someone was just saying in the chat, hey, I signed up, I got a Weeble account, but I want to come over here and learn how to make some money. So come on over and do that. Yes, yes, yes. And David, where can people find you?
You can find me over at youtube.com/overlandgeeks. And lately I've been playing music for some of you guys. I got a lot of Morning Invest people over there, and it's awesome seeing you guys over there and over here, because I can say a little bit more over there that I can't say here. I swear on my show, just so you know, Clayton. So, but I do overlanding and minimalism and stuff like that. Plus, we just talk about stuff and hang out. So come on over and join the conversation.
Sweet, sweet. All right, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us today on the old broadcast. Grover says, peace out, everyone. We'll see you back here bright and early tomorrow morning. Mañana.
Mañana. Go eat tacos.
Yeah, we'll be watching that election results. We'll have a full breakdown tomorrow on the show.